Welcome to the New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, the New Mind Creator. Today, I'll be interviewing Ronnie Davis. Please make sure to hit the subscribe button so that you'll receive alerts when new episodes are available on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Also, please leave me a review on iTunes or Spotify.
I have this saying that man can't turn from something until he turns to something. So the power in life is not stopping eating something. The power in life is starting. That's what sustains us, what we do, and we just build momentum onto that.
Well, exactly. And what I've realized specifically with the food thing is that if you take away all of the rules and restrictions, then your brain stops being scared it's not going to have the foods anymore. So the cravings will start to go away and you stop feeling like you're bad if you eat something bad. So you stop feeling this compulsive need to keep punishing yourself with food and you can start to pay attention to how the foods you're eating are making you feel rather than trying to live up to some expectation of eating perfect and restricting all of your favorites. You just start paying attention to how the foods you're eating are making your body feel and you start automatically wanting to make better choices. It is a complete and total switch that changes everything. And it is just because of the stuff going on in your brain.
Yes. So I'm going to make a statement and I just want you to just expound on it. So you believe that it is possible for someone to change their physical existence, their weight, and their struggles by changing their thought patterns.
I believe that not only is it possible, I believe that it's required. And the fact that we have been ignoring our brains while trying to change our physical health or weight is the reason why it's failing everybody. The current paradigm is not working. 98% of people who lose weight on a diet regain it all. And two-thirds of them, as many as two-thirds of them, will weigh 11 pounds more than they started within 5 years. Not only is it possible, it is required to use our thought patterns and our brain to change our physical health and our weight.
Great.
Absolutely, yes.
Yes. So you have been doing some great things in transforming people's lives through nutrition and just weight trainer, personal trainer rather, award-winning personal trainer and nutrition and wellness coach. So this, all of these things that you're doing, how on earth did you not like just give up? And because we have so many cases that we can see over time and just different experiences of where people just gave up. Why did Ronnie not give up when she could have given up?
Excellent question. Because trust me when I tell you, I could have given up a bit of a trillion times in the last 12 years or so. I think in the beginning, when I first started, working out and getting into fitness and competing and all of those things, I think in the beginning, it was purely because I was desperately trying to prove that I was worth something. It was just this underlying desperation to just feel worthy in life. And I knew that if I just worked hard enough, then I can get there. And that stopped being my driving force probably the last time I competed, when I was on stage, 20 other women on stage with me. And I walked off of the stage carrying my first place trophy. I was the best one on there. And, I have this big smile on my face, but there's still all of the shame and self-loathing hiding underneath that I thought winning was going to fix. So in the beginning, again, it was just this desperate need to feel like I was worth something. Once I realized that the chasing those things wasn't going to get me that feeling, it became survival, really, for me. Because I knew that I just had this trust, I suppose, somewhere in me that life was meant to be more than what I was living. Like, I was not put on this planet to spend the short amount of time I have here at war with my body and with food and with at life. I just had this, there has to be more. And I had this vision of who I wanted to be or who I was supposed to be. And I just held on to that vision and I just kept working towards her. And, you know, there were many days where I couldn't do anything. I would, you know, in bed in the fetal position, depression is not something that's easily overcome, you know? So there were many days where, you know, it's not like I was in this nonstop battle forward. That's not how it works. It's just, there was always this belief that I was meant for more and that there's more to life than living this way. And I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to give up on myself until I get there.
That shows a lot of resilience from you. I've heard you make a statement just now about winning the competition. You were first, but yet you felt unfulfilled. I've heard that in athletes who've won championships, and after the fact, they said, Deion Sanders, for example, I heard him during an interview several years ago, and he said that he had just won the Super Bowl, and before 12 o'clock, well, he said he went almost straight home afterwards, and he just found himself in his house by himself, and it wasn't fulfilling. So he was missing something. He was like one of the top athletes during his heyday, but yet that wasn't fulfilling to him. So I guess it's important for the individual to have that hunger for themselves, to know that there must be more than their present situation.
Right. And I think, like, I think a lot of it, I'm certainly not unique in that I chased success to fill something that was missing within me. Like, I think that's really common for a lot of athletes and business people and just people in general. I think that we chase that feeling of feeling like we're enough through succeeding. And for me, it was just through my body. For Deion Sanders, maybe it was through, I'm sorry, I don't remember what sport he plays. Super Bowl.
Football.
You said. Football. Yeah, I'm really bad with sports. That's embarrassing. But, you know, like we chase these feelings, like, you know, it's like this hole of self-worth that we have in us. And we chase these feelings through everything outside of us. And then we get that thing and we go, oh, gee, that didn't make me feel the way it was supposed to make me feel. Now what? Next thing. That'll do it.
Yes. It's a constant searching, right?
Yeah. And so for me, I just kind of went, okay, no, like I have to figure out how to fix the stuff in me that's causing me to feel like I have to get these feelings from outside of myself. And again, that also comes down to the thoughts and beliefs that we tell ourselves over the years, right? Like it starts as an initial thought, but the more we live it, the more it becomes a subconscious belief that just runs our life that we don't even realize is doing it.
Yeah. So you're a mindfulness based cognitive behavioral coach. So when did you begin focusing on that?
It was sort of a gradual transformation for me. Probably 3 years ago, I started really trying to help clients with food issues. You know, when personal training clients would come to me, I would really start trying to help them with their food issues, but most of them just didn't want that part of it. They wanted to be told what to eat and how to exercise to get the perfect body that they wanted, and that's all they cared about. And so for a couple of years, I tried to just sort of walk the line there. I was like on the fence trying to be the personal trainer that was helping them with the mindfulness stuff, right? Like with the brain stuff. And really probably like in the last year and a half, 2 years, I suppose. It was just, I can't do the training anymore because it's not working for people. And the other thing about the training, like the body transformation and stuff, is that stuff is not permanent, right? Like even when somebody would come to me and they would make progress, they have to keep eating that way and they have to keep exercising that way forever for the results to last. And most people don't. But with the brain training, it not only transforms your body, it transforms your entire life, and in a way that lasts. It's not like exercising where the results are undone when you stop doing it. It completely changes everything forever. And so probably in the last 2 years in particular, and then last year, sometime middle of last year, I finally went, that's it, no more training, this is all I'm doing. And that was scary because, you know, I could pay my bills as a trainer. It's easy to get clients that way. All you have to do is pop up a before and after picture of a client weight loss success and you get new clients. So it was a really scary transition to make because I didn't know how to get clients this way. I know how to transform people this way, but it's a tougher pull because you don't have those visuals. Like I can't show a before and after of somebody's brain.
True. So how can someone begin the process of rewiring their brain and their thought patterns?
So the first and easiest thing to start doing is start paying attention to why they're eating what they're eating. And I'm just talking in terms of food.
Yes.
But pretty much in terms, like, the same system works for everything, right? So with food, it's why am I eating that? Am I hungry? What thoughts was I just thinking? Like one of my clients one time, for example, was saying that she's in the mirror in the morning. She woke up in the morning feeling pretty good. She gets in the mirror, she's brushing her teeth, and she sees a wrinkle in her forehead. And all of a sudden, she starts deciding she's going to go have a piece of chocolate. So when we talked through the process, she realized when she saw the wrinkle in her forehead, her brain went, oh, you're so old and gross, food, right? So it's really about noticing the thought, the way that thought makes you feel, and then the behavior that happens after it. I looked in the mirror and I hated what I saw. My brain said, you're fat and ugly. That made me feel really bad about myself. And so I reached for something, quote, bad.
So that requires people to begin the process also of being mindful, being in the present moment, because there's a lot of times that it's almost like we're just existing and just going from one thing to the other and not really extracting the best out of life or even being pleasured by what is happening right now. Although things may not be perfect in your life, we can still enjoy the sun if it's shining. We can enjoy the rain if it's raining. We can smell the smell when it's raining or the snow or whatever. Just those little small things, the leaves off of the trees that we could bring us in that present moment so we can feel. Oftentimes, we don't feel in life, and it causes us not to be able to extract the good things out of life.
Oh, 100%. And as a matter of fact, in the case of, you know, people who overeat and binge and things, we purposely don't feel. We are purposely trying not to feel. So absolutely, you have to be mindful and in the moment for this process to even work, because if you're not in the moment, then you can't unravel the stuff going on in your head, right? You have to be in the moment to even notice what's happening. But I read somewhere that something like 45 to 50% of our day, we literally just go on autopilot all day. We're not even aware of our actions. Our brain is just, you know, point A to point B. It's, you know, like brushing your teeth. You go into the bathroom to brush your teeth. You don't even know you're doing it. Driving to work, you don't even know you're doing it. You're just on autopilot. One of my clients said to me yesterday or today, this morning, I guess, she was saying how, you know, she's been practicing the mindfulness aspect of this. And she's been saying how she notices how much she feels like she has so much more time in her day now because she's so much more aware of what's going on around her, right? Because otherwise you just go through the day with blinders on and you don't notice the sun. You don't notice the leaves changing on the trees. You don't notice the, you know, flowers as you're going by them. And you're not You're not living life. You're just existing in life.
Yes. That's, yeah, that's telling. In our society, especially, where we're so driven to achieve things, money, fame, you name it. We just want to be always the best.
Yeah. But
there's a place for that. It's to be the best version of ourselves, how we should begin to change that psyche.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And I think there's a lot in our society too that, you know, everybody's trying to live up to what everybody, what they think everybody else expects them to be. And I did this myself for a long time too. Like, you know, who do I have to be acceptable to everybody around me? And so we go through life just trying to be who we think we're supposed to be, rather than just living authentically the way that we want to live to make us happy. And then that contributes to, you know, these just wanting to numb everything and just living in this autopilot life because we're not happy and or fulfilled because we're not living authentically.
Yeah, true. How do your family members perceive this new version of you, and they know that you've overcome these different things? How do they perceive this newness of you?
So, I mean, family's always proud, right? Like, they're always telling you, I'm so proud of you, you're so amazing, all the whatever. But my mom in particular has been pretty cool because a lot of the stuff that I've dealt with in my life, I sort of inherited from my mother. And not to sound like I'm trying to blame her or anything, because we all do, right? Like, we tend to pick up, you know, some of the stuff that our parents carry. And so a lot of the stuff, especially with like weight and food and things that I've struggled with, I picked up from my mom. And so as I've been making this, you know, this sort of, I don't want to call it the new version of me. I think this is just who I was all along. It just took me a while to figure it out. But, you know, as I've been making this transition and experiencing all this growth and sharing what I've been learning along the way, my mom has been changing as well in some really incredible ways. So it's not just that she's, you know, I'm proud of you, that's great, but she's also seen it transform a number of things in her own life. And so she's always telling me, like messaging me different things about how I've been helping her, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that is, because you know what? Like, as you said, we inherit some things, a lot of things from our upbringing, our parents or whoever our caregivers were in our family line. And the interesting thing about that is once someone overcomes something, it gives power and momentum in that family. Just like Roger Bannister, I believe, he was the first person to run the 4-minute mile. So after that, there were thousands of people began to run the 4-minute mile when at first no one thought it was even possible. So what we overcome, we can almost stick a stake as if we conquered that particular thing. And then it causes other people to get more confidence, and then they could take that on as well and become a better self. They can become better and overcome some things. Because, you know, like, there are some weaknesses in every family, right? Mm. There are some weaknesses. But once one person overcomes that, that could be a catalyst for generations to come to be able to dominate in that space. And that becomes what was once an Achilles heel becomes their strength, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that, I mean, for me anyway, I think that the goal should just always be to leave the next generation better than ours. And so that's my goal. And not even just in my family, right? It's in the world. So with my daughter, I want my daughter to grow up in this world as a better version than I was. Right. And, you know, I'm helping my mom because I've learned, you know, a little bit better than she learned through her life. Right. So it's like every generation just sort of breaks through that glass ceiling of the last generation and grows and gets better and better and better.
Yes, I believe that's the way it's supposed to be. There's this thread that binds us.
Yeah. And I see in my daughter all of the time. I'm always kidding. Thank goodness she's so much better than I was at her age. And I don't know how I did it, but somehow or other I've raised somebody that's better than me. So
yeah. I remember growing up, one of my family members would say to me, don't be like me, be better than me. And I didn't realize what they were saying at the time as a kid. You know, they just want, like stand on my shoulders and go higher.
I just heard do as I say, not as I do.
I've heard that too.
And I've probably said it.
Yes, I've definitely heard that one too. So are you working on any new projects currently?
So I started another book that has been a long process because I'm always working on some project or another. I've got several different groups running in the local areas around here, and I've got an online group for my cognitive eating. Cognitive eating is the online course that I've created that combines the best of mindful eating, the best of intuitive eating, and cognitive behavioral strategies. So I've got several of those running right now. I've got another one starting in a local community in a couple of weeks. And what else do I have on the go? Oh, I just recently started putting together a new project called The Real Diet Story that I haven't gotten much ground on yet because I'm always doing 20 different projects at once. But my Real Diet Story is where I want to highlight the stories of women who have spent their lives dieting. And so my goal is for every single before and after picture that somebody sees online, I want there to be the real diet story behind that. Because the real diet story is that, sure, they may lose weight, but what happens afterwards? They regain it and they feel ashamed and they stay in that cycle forever. And so that's my hope with my Real Diet Story project. I just want to highlight some of those stories and just start a conversation around this. You know, I was technically a diet success when I was sitting on the floor of my bathroom trying to make myself throw up because I had just eaten an entire bag of candy, right? Like, I really want to start talking about what dieting is doing to us. So that's the purpose of my diet story project. And just trying to build up cognitive eating because I really believe that this is the path to the future and has the ability to revolutionize the way we look at healthy eating and weight loss in general, for that matter.
Good. So what was the name of your first book?
Oh, Life on the Reflux Roller Coaster. So my first book wasn't related to health and fitness or any of these things. My first book was about my daughter. She was born with health issues when she was a baby. And so the first book that I wrote was about just the first year of her life and trying to live with her condition as severe as it was, raising awareness, that kind of thing, helping other parents. I guess I've always kind of been in this position of let me turn my pain into my purpose kind of a thing. I had created a website back then. It was one of the biggest on the internet for that condition. And so I wrote a book on that. And so now I'm tentatively titling it Life on the Diet Roller Coaster as a follow up.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. So where would people be able to even get your first book? Where could they get it from?
Oh, I'm not even sure it's still in production, actually. Okay. But I think Amazon still has copies of it.
Amazon. Okay.
I don't think it's still in print, but Amazon would probably have like used copies and stuff. I think they're probably still there.
Okay. And your upcoming book, you just have somewhat of a working title.
It's a work in progress. Yeah, I'm aiming for next year, but we'll see.
Okay. Okay, good. So how can people get in contact with you, social media contact or?
So my website's probably the easiest. It's just www.ronniedavis.com. That's RONIDAVIS.com. And then I'm also on Facebook, Ronnie Davis figure athlete. I'm still on Facebook as Ronnie Davis figure athlete. And I'm also on Twitter. I have an Instagram, but I rarely use it. So Facebook or my website is probably the best way.
Okay. So any parting words that you would like to leave our listeners with, anyone who could be having some challenges with eating, dieting, weight gain, weight loss, and they are feeling as though they're by themselves. They may not be strong enough to even share what they're going through with other people who could possibly help them. What would you how would you encourage them?
So I think that I would say that you can't change anything until you find the strength to reach out for help. And it's not as scary as you think it is, because there are millions of other people living the exact same way who would be desperate to hear that they're not alone too. And so reaching out for help is really the best way to just start the process of finding freedom and living a more full, happy life. And that it is absolutely possible to get there, because I'm proof. And I would also say that you can't change anything while you still believe you deserve to be punished.
Thank you for listening to The New Mind Creator Podcast with your host, Maurice, The New Mind Creator. This podcast has been sponsored by Abundant Sports and True Serum. Head over to www.mauriceflournoy.com to receive more motivation and insight to help create your new mind.